the next part of this morning's agenda is a roundtable discussion on publications, the ACB Braille Forum, the Blind Californian, and other newsletters that we receive as being part of the organization. And to that end, I have asked Annette Carter to facilitate this roundtable, and we've asked our guest from out of state, Ron Brooks, to participate with a couple of other CCB members. So would you please give Annette a hand and give Annette a hand, and she'll do the introductions.
Thank you for this last panel. That was very informative, and I'm glad I was here for it. And as she said earlier, she asked me to facilitate this roundtable that's not really round. And she brought together some wonderful people to speak on a topic that you are interested in and we're wanting your input on. We're going to talk about publications and formats and alternate formats. And do you have your publications in the format? Do you know what formats are available? Is your format, your preferred format, going away? And what do you know, those kinds of things. and so speaking of format, this happened yesterday when I was wanting something to eat in the little cafe next to the registration table. And Bernice had already gone on to where she was going, and Roger and I were in there, and the nice waiter had, Roger was reading the Braille menu, and I could not decide. He was reading, and I couldn't decide what I really wanted. And he said, "Can I offer you a menu with big words?" And I just chuckled because I've never heard it that way. And all I could think of was, you know, one with words with a lot of letters in each. That's all I could think of. So he saw me chuckling. And he says, "Oh, you mean like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious?" I said, "Yes, that's it." And he talked about a musical and somebody else, you know. And I said, "But, you know," so the conversation took a turn, and I said, "Well, can you say that backwards?" So, and then I thought, well, what if we say it loud enough? Would we sound precocious? You know? And I thought, well, that's another word that could be in the menu because it's a big word. So it was kind of funny. And then I thought, well, how about, would another word be umdelai? So anyway, I just decided to have a hamburger. Yeah, there are hamburgers. Yes, yeah, hamburger. And this is recorded, so we have some wonderful volunteers that are going to run the mics for us, and so I have one that's going to be run beside along the head table here, and then one between you. So if you have something to say, then go ahead and raise your hand, and at the appropriate time, I'll recognize you to speak. So I'm going to introduce who's at this table. And the first one to our right is Ron Brooks, who lives in Phoenix, Arizona, with his wife, Lisa. Their three kids, two seeing eye dogs, and Ron's retired dog, Yogi, or retired guide Yogi. Ron's very involved with ACB and several state and special interest affiliates. He's the president of Guide Dog Users of Arizona and a member of the ACB Transportation Committee. In 2013, Ron was appointed to the ACB Board of Publications by ACB President Kim Charlson. From 1990 to 1996, Ron lived in Northern California, yay, where he was very involved with several CCB chapters, including Blind Students of California, the Alameda County, and Silicon Valley chapters. Ron also served on CCB's Publications Committee. And he spent a couple of years as CCB Resolutions Committee Chairman in the mid-90s. Ron loves reading, writing, long walks on the beach. No, kidding. He didn't write that. Reading, writing, and takes pride in his role as a change agent on the ACB Board of Publications. And may I say that I'm glad that he's there, and I consider him a hero and a champion for our concerns. Next to him is Roger Peterson, who was born in Boise, Idaho, and attended the Idaho School for the Deaf and the Blind in Gooding through the sixth grade. Then his family moved to Portland, Oregon, where he attended public school through high school, graduating from Beaverton High in Beaverton, Oregon in 1960. He graduated from the University of Oregon, Eugene, with a BA in psychology, and did graduate work at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. Roger was assistant professor of psychology at Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland, for 3 years, after which he moved to Baltimore and then to Washington, D.C. His organizational activity began when he was at Cornell and put together a blind student directory so the blind students could share materials, etc. That led to starting the student division of the National Federation of the Blind in 1966, later becoming a member of ACB. In 1986, he moved to Phoenix, Arizona, and then to Mountain View, California, where he took a job with Telesensory Corporation for 10 years. Roger served on committees for the city of Mountain View and the county of Santa Clara, now serving on the Senior Advisory Committee of the city, and served on the board of his condominium complex. Roger is the second vice president of CCB and serves on the CCB Publications Committee. And then to Roger's right is Susan Glass. She's recently retired from 30 wonderful years of teaching English composition, creative writing, literature, and women's studies, first at San Jose State University and then at West Valley Community College in Saratoga, California. Congratulations, 30 years, wow. Susan joined the Silicon Valley Council of the Blind and CCB in 2005. She currently is the editor of the Silicon Valley Council's newsletter, In Touch, as well as editor of ACB's Friends in Art affiliate newsletter, Log on the Bridge Tender. Susan is vice president of Kahlua and also a member of the CCB Board of Publications. Some additional ACB activities include serving as a Braille Revival League board member and as secretary for the American Association of Blind Teachers. Susan also serves on the ACB Audio Description Project Steering Committee. Okay, so we're going to, let's do some self-introductions and just a snippet of what you expect out of this, what you hope to get out of this time together. And then I'm going to have the panelists talk a little bit, and then we're going to give it right back to you. Most of the time will be for you, questions and comments. So we're going to go from start to finish, so everybody has a chance to introduce themselves. So in front of me, to my left, we're going to start from here. And if you would introduce yourself and tell us what you think that you'd like out of this time together.
Cam Shure.
Really close to the mic.
Cam Shure from Monterey, and I am open to whatever you have to offer.
All right, thank you. Yeah, these microphones, especially because it's recorded, you want to get closer than you really think you need to. Go ahead.
I'm Dan Smith, and I'm president of the Council of Citizens with Low Vision International, and I hope to get a better understanding of ACB's Board of Publications policies regarding the Braille Forum. I have a big concern because I use a computer a lot at work and at home, and sometimes for my leisure reading, I really enjoy having a magazine, and it's really helpful for me to have it in large print, and it concerns me a great deal that we are not publishing our material in large print, and I'm thinking that the Braille Forum needs to be a regular publication, and it should not be just an e-publication. I know that you're doing some printed and some modified media, but I want to be sure every publication is available for everyone, no matter what their needs are. So that's my opinion, and I'm open to listening and learning.
Great. Thank you. Next.
Excuse me. This is Bernice Kandarian, and the reason I had for organizing this roundtable is that I want to be sure that all members are educated as to what's happening and what's evolving, and that you have a strong voice in trying to affect what is happening to best meet your needs.
Hi, I'm Wayne Dick, and I'm really interested in your infrastructure, your electronic infrastructure, because, you know, we're really kind of at a point where we don't have to make a choice between electronic. We're really at a point where we don't have to make much of a choice between electronic and other forms, because we can put them in formats that produce anything at all these days, and I'd like to see that happen.
My name is Chris Gist. I'm with the Department of Rehabilitation. I'm the Older Individuals Who Are Blind program manager, and I'm just here to learn today. So I work for Joe Xavier.
Yeah, hold the mic very, very close. Very, very close.
I'm Terry Coney. I'm just coming to see what's going on.
Hello, everybody. I'm Donna Sanchez. I'm on our CCB publications board, and I ditto Dan Smith's remarks.
This is Josie Conkling, and I'm receiving the Braille form in cassette. I would like to receive it electronically, because I use my computer quite a bit, and it's, if you don't, you know, whatever, cassettes are going out, I think, in a lot of our magazines, and electronically it sounds really good.
Hi, I'm Sandy Nelson, and well, first of all, I'm legally blind, not blind enough to be totally blind, not sighted enough to be sighted, if you know what I mean. I'm in the middle, and you don't look blind. I'm one of those. My father is 84, his macular degeneration. He lives in San Jose. I told him there's great stuff in Mountain View, Dad. It's everywhere out there. You can get all kinds of stuff. So I'm partially here for him. To help him in his, he's going to live to 140, I know that. But I'd like to help him get to where he wants to be and do what he wants to continue to do. So I'm just here for the information and support for him.
Great, thank you. Next.
My name's Olivia Presley, and I'm here from the Fresno chapter delegate. And I'm very thankful to be able to receive the Braille form in Braille, and also the Blind Californian. And I'm here to find out about funding, how that works, and if you're if you need more money in regard to that. So thank you.
Okay, that was a little faint. But Olivia, I hadn't seen you in a long time. I'm going to repeat, because I'm not sure if everybody heard, but I think you said that you currently receive the Braille form and something else in Braille.
The Blind Californian,
and you wanted to talk about funding or questions. Okay. And you're president of what, Olivia?
I'm the delegate for the Fresno chapter.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm Patty Nash. I'm the delegate for Bayview chapter, and I've been a Braille teacher for the last 17 years. And my students, when they learn Braille, most of them have been blind for not so long, and they're so excited about reading, and they want to get the information that they need in accessible format. So, of course, they want to read Braille. and a lot of them belong to the, some belong to the chapter and to CCB. And so I just want to learn as much about publications as I can, and if I have anything else to say, I will. Thank you.
I'm sorry. We're competing with a lot of crowd noise to the door just at my left ear, and so I can hardly hear, and so I'm not sure if even it'll get on the recording, but almost eat the mic. Thank you.
Sorry about that. Okay. I'm Patty Nash, and I'm the delegate for Bayview Chapter. I'm a Braille teacher, and I've been teaching for 17 years, and the students that I work with have recently lost their vision or are losing it, and they're really enthusiastic about Braille and want all the information that they receive in an accessible format. So, a lot of them belong to CCB and want to read the publications in Braille and get really excited about it. So I want to learn as much as I can about the publications and anything I might have to offer later. I'll be glad to. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Patty.
This is Bob Rennie, and my wife Bonnie wanted to be at this meeting, but she had another one next door, and so she couldn't be at two places at once. She just recently got an iPhone, and they're going to talk about the iPhone and the different electronic formats, and so I'm here for her representation. She's involved with the Publications Committee and also with senior issues, so thank you.
Did we get everybody?
That's it.
Okay, great. Thank you, thank you, thank you. That was just the start of your participation. So now I'm going to turn the mic over to Ron Brooks, and you may have had the pleasure of hearing him speak a couple of times already at the convention here, and we're excited to hear what Ron has to say, and he might be just might be asking you questions as well.
Well, good morning. First off, I just want to say, for those of you who are at the Kahlua Luncheon, if you were at the Kahlua Luncheon and if you heard the story that Annette just rattled through this morning, all I can tell you is that's what happens when you read 50 Shades of Grey. So, and to my esteemed colleague to my right here, Roger, I just want to say that, you know, after hearing your pedigree, I just want to just point out that I also have a college degree. I was kind of feeling a little inferior, and I have actually gotten a college degree from a rather fine institution as well, although I don't believe we had East Coast pedigree associated with it. So, in any case, I appreciate being here, and I want to tell you that, you know, one of the things in my bio that Annette summarized is true. I really view myself as a change agent. That's been true pretty much all the time. Ever since I came to Northern California from Indiana to go to graduate school, probably because I thought, you know, anything that goes on in California has to be better than anything that goes on in Indiana. So I love, you know, being on, you know, the progressive edge of things that are happening. I always have, and I certainly have tried and will continue to try to bring that to the Board of Publications. And not to say that the Board of Publications needs a lot of change, but I think there's always room for improvement. There's always things that we can do better than we did them before. And I really feel strongly. Another thing that I want to share, and it's not in my bio, is I actually am sitting here with, I'm totally blind. I use Braille. I use JAWS. I use my iPhone. But I was sighted for the first 14 years of my life as a low vision reader, and I used large print. And I remember as my eyesight was diminishing, especially like in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, I remember how it was to try to read stuff I really couldn't read. I remember how it was when the print seemed, the white of the page was too bright, and the print moved around, and the light didn't work quite right, and it was too small, and the columns were hard to follow, and I couldn't track very well. I remember all that stuff, and I remember the headaches that came when I tried to read, because when I was a kid, and I'm in my late 40s, I remember that at that time, if you know, and my parents told me, if you don't use what you have, you'll lose it. And so the focus was on getting as much out of as you could. And so, of course, you read until your eyes hurt and your head hurt and your brain hurt. And that was made worse when you couldn't really read the print to begin with. So one of the things that I'm sensitive to is that when we produce print, it should be accessible to the extent that we can make it accessible. Okay. Now, you guys just heard me say it should be accessible, but I want you also to make sure you heard the second part, to the extent we can make it accessible. And one of the things that I am frustrated by is the notion that I hear that there's always an all or a nothing. And the thing that I've kind of learned in talking with Annette and others within CCLVI is there's a lot of different considerations when you look at print. Some people see things differently. Obviously, there's lots of different eye conditions that contribute to print, to how you read print. And one of the things that we have to recognize is we've got to figure out how we can be as much accessible to as many people as we can. And then we have to figure out what are the other ways that we can make information accessible. Because we're probably not ever going to be 100% accessible to 100% of the people that want to read a particular format. The other thing, and there is a blind equivalent, by the way. There are lots of blind people who can't read Braille because of dexterity in their fingers. And we don't produce jumbo Braille. So, you know, we have to recognize that you know, there are lots of situations where there's more that we could do, but we can't do everything, so we do what we can do. And you have my commitment, and the people who have sat through some of the discussions that the BOP has had will know that you have my commitment personally, and I think the BOP's commitment, at least some of us, to really push those issues as hard as we can. On the other side, there are the realities of finance. And I talked a little bit about this last night. The ACB, is a nonprofit organization, and resources are constrained, so we have a budget. And the way this works with an ACB is that the BOP makes decisions about content. We make decisions about format in so much as how it looks and how it should read and how it should be presented. And we request a budget. But the BOP does not have the authority to set its own budget. The budget is set by the Board of Directors. So in 2013, the board made a decision because of the financial constraints within the organization to essentially cut the amount of money that was available to produce the ACB Braille Forum. And the Board of Publications was essentially given a directive to live within a budget, like all of us have to do at home. I was just moving money to pay my taxes, and boy, it felt personal. So we have to live with a budget. And in so doing, the BOP basically said, you know, we're about providing information. We want to get as much information to our readers and to ACB members across the country as we possibly can. But obviously, we don't control the purse. The purse comes from the ACB board. So we made a decision. And I when I say we, I mean the BOP. I actually wasn't there. But I probably would have agreed with this decision. To diversify how we approach information. And some of these things were already starting to happen. We have already been looking for new ways to cut cost so that we can produce more. We have already been looking at formats, electronic formats and more electronic formats, different kinds of formats, audio on computer, all those sorts of things. Because that's where the technology trend is going. And even though the blind community may lag in some respects behind the technology trend, you know, we're all still part of this, part of society, and we will eventually continue, as with the rest of society, to move toward more and more kinds of technology. So the BOP basically made a decision to that I think was a smart one at the time, and I still think it was a smart one, but it had ramifications. And that decision was to split, to basically decrease the frequency of the ACB Braille Forum. And by doing that, it meant that we had less shipping cost, and it meant that we had we could spread our fixed cost a little different, and we produced longer magazines, but we issued them less often. We then added a new publication, which ended up being called the ACBE Forum, to take the place of the ACB Braille Forum in the months that it, that the one wasn't offered, the other was. And the combined result is more information going to ACB members more frequently than it did before. And I think everybody thought that was a good decision because it maximized resource, it increased the amount of information that we could get into people's hands, and it got us around a very difficult financial reality. The challenge, of course, is that for people who do not have access to computers, this was a problem because they couldn't read the ACBE forum. Now, I would add that the ACB has, for a long time, had other information that's not accessible. You know, the ACB website is wonderful if you have a computer, but if you don't, then you're probably not accessing it. So it's not the first time the ACB has made a decision to make information available in an electronic format where there was no equivalent in hard copy print or Braille or on cassette. So that's kind of where, how we kind of got into this current circumstance that we're in today. So what I want to tell you is a couple of things about formats, and then I'll stop. We are striving to provide as many formats for the ACB Braille Forum and the ACB E Forum as we can, and we are striving to reach people, even those who don't have computers. And I'll start with the ACB Braille Forum. Of course, it's available in what the organization refers to as large print, and I recognize that that large print needs to be configured differently. And to that end, the ACB Board of Publications has adopted new editorial guidelines, which include better language around large print. And, that change probably won't happen right away, but now it's policy for the organization, and we are striving to move toward it. We do produce Braille, cassette still. We also produce online. It's on the website. It's downloadable. It's available via email. If you subscribe to an email, there's an email list on the ACB website where you can download it in email, or you get it actually sent to your email box. We are also have now put the ACB Braille Forum on, put the ACB Braille Forum on our AudioNow phone system, which is currently delivering delivering the ACB radio to people on their telephones. We talked about that last night. And we are also working on a podcast. Annette is, she thinks I was going to forget that, but I saved it for last. I'm sorry? Yes, Newsline. Yes.
The question was not on the mic.
ACB discs. So CD-ROM, yes. So lots and lots of formats. Now, ACB eForum. Of course, the whole point of an e-forum is that it's e-electronic. We recognize that is not being produced in hard copy print, and it is not being produced in hard copy Braille, nor is it being produced on cassette. And again, the whole point of the e-forum was to provide additional information during a time when we did not have resource. So the e-forum is available, of course, on electronic formats. It's available on the website. It's available via email if you subscribe, and it's a separate email subscription list, which that was kind of a shocker. but anyway, it's a separate list. We are also working to make it available via telephone through the AudioNow. We are also looking at a pod. If we do a podcast, it would be for both. So we are looking to do all of those things. So, you know, there are, again, we are looking to cover all formats. What I would tell you about, just a couple of things, and then I'll stop. Cost is the determining factor for formats, especially when you get into hard copy print and hard copy Braille. We estimate that a cost, that one issue of the ACB Braille form in its current format, along with the ACB eForm, which doesn't have very much cost at this point, to produce those for one member for 1 year cost $40. Okay, on average, if you average out the cost of all the formats and you add it all together and you divide it by the number you send out, it's $40 for one person for 1 year. Your dues are $10. Okay, I'm sorry, $5 to the ACB. So we don't. It's not like this is a money making operation here, folks. So when we start to talk about we want more formats, the Board of Publications doesn't have a dog in that fight. I mean, we're fine with formats. We're fine with hard copy. We're fine with large print. We're fine with Braille, but it's a money issue. So one of the things that we want to do, because we also know that times change, people change, preferences change, and we talked about the survey last night. Two goals of the survey. One is to find out how people read, what they'd like to see more of, what they could do with less of. But the other piece is to also look at how do people feel about cost? You know, given that this is one of the major benefits ACB tries, you know, seeks to offer, is this something that people would be willing to pay more for? Would they be willing to, either in the form of higher dues or in the form of a subscription fee or something else? You know, because we realize that we want to deliver the publications you want to have, but we also have to pay for it. So please do your survey. You know, when you have the opportunity, and that'll come in mid-May, take the survey, tell us your thoughts. You know, give us as much as we can. Make sure that your friends, your chapter members, everybody does this, because the more information we have, the more responsive we can be. Again, you've got my commitment, and we'll talk more, and you can ask me questions. I'm committed to giving you the print you need, the formats you need, to the extent that our budget will permit. And I will continue to be a champion that if we produce anything that comes on a piece of paper, that piece of paper is going to be usable by the people we intend to give it to. So I'm going to hand it to Roger. And
Ron is making sure that the survey that he's talking about will reach everybody, no matter what format you currently get publications, even where you can call in and somebody will be on the phone and can assist you through the questions. Okay, so now Roger Peterson, you're up. Thank you, Ron.
You know, my contention about formats has gone back a long way. I remember when I was in graduate school writing nasty letters to what was then Recording for the Blind, which now has an entirely nonsensical name, Learning Ally. I call it Blind Alley. But anyway, what I was saying to them then was, why in hell are you still using embossed plastic discs, which at best, when you play them on your talking book machine, sound like something you got from Radio Nigeria on shortwave, when we've got perfectly good tape recorders? And they said, oh, we can't use tape for this and that reason and so forth and so on. And we've decided what's best for you and all this. And they eventually changed to tape, to cassettes. Actually, they changed to open reels briefly and then went to cassettes. But so that's where I started out with media controversies. I remember going to school with We had a WebCore open reel tape recorder with three motors in it because it could go both directions, and it weighed about 60 pounds, I think. Talk about being portable. But I've been real concerned about this. I've been on for a while on the CCB Publications Committee, and of course we've discussed it in our chapter too. Susan is, as you heard, is the editor of the Silicon Valley Council of the Blinds newsletter, In Touch, and we've tried to figure out how to work the format game. When everybody went to cassette, one of the reasons was that it was a good idea, that it was something that, the cassettes were relatively cheap, and you could keep them. We didn't have to have them returned and so on. But the other thing was that the NLS was providing a free cassette machine to everybody, a free cassette player. Well, now not only are cassettes kind of going away, but the player that NLS is providing plays some real expensive cartridges, and if those cartridges came down in price, that would help. We could use that format then, and maybe we can use it now. I don't know, but and of course one of the reasons why we use these funny formats is that NLS has always contended that one of the reasons they can get copyright permission from publishers is that they use a non-standard format as a way of making it less likely that non-eligible people will use the services. So anyway, I guess that's my kind of what's going around in my head trying to figure out this format thing. What responsibility is there on the part of the user as well as on the part of the provider and so on? But we also need to think, by the way, Ron, you might want to think about this when you develop the survey. Seems to me one of the things we need to know about our readers is, do they want to keep their issues of their newsletter? If they don't, then that's their limit. There are some options that, like, we could give them the NLS's new cassette cartridge and make them return it. And also, do you want to be able to read individual articles easily, or do you just read the whole thing and all that? But I guess I'm thinking now that one of the things we ought to talk about, and maybe it's something that seniors with vision loss might have a session on at a future convention, is what ways are there that the population, and I guess the population that the seniors with vision loss deals with might be among the higher levels of non-computer use in the group. Do we want to think about, are there ways that people can, without being real techies, use some kind of electronic media? There's even the NFB Newsline. I hate to say that, but there, and that's, but that's there, and that's another option. If you don't want to keep the thing, maybe you could even figure out how to record it for yourself and keep it. I don't know. But anyway, we're thinking about all these things. We want feedback about all these things. And I was going to say that that not having a computer now, I think, or not having the internet now, is kind of like not having a telephone when I was growing up. I remember when I was growing up, I knew people who didn't have telephones. They were kind of weird, and there weren't too many of them, but they were there. And I think they probably wanted to get telephones as soon as they could. So I know there are other people. There's people in our population, like Kathy Skivers, who say, "I don't want a computer. I never will have a computer. A pox on computers." But I think a lot of us would use this stuff. And believe me, I'm no avant-garde type. I have a 10-year-old computer, I think. And it just lost the Microsoft support because it has XP on it. But anyway, that's enough nonsense from me. And I think you'd much rather listen to the beautiful melodic voice of the flutist extraordinaire and singer and all kinds of stuff, Susan Glass.
He's far more sweet than I deserve. He is also my mentor. Roger edited our Silicon Valley In Touch newsletter before I did, and he taught me well. I mean, I paid really close attention to how he put things together, and he's always been accessible for article ideas and programming ideas. And you know, Roger is the kind of person who does not live for himself. He lives for the community in many ways, and you can go to Roger and get what you need in a really wonderful way, you know, in a historical way. So I want to embarrass him because I consider him a dear friend and an asset to our organizations. So I have to say that. I am currently the editor of the Silicon Valley Council of the Blind newsletter, In Touch. I didn't do a few vital pieces of homework that I should have done today, so I will apologize. I can't tell you what our chapter's exact membership is this year, but I'm guessing it's around this. Yeah. 79? Thank you. Okay. That helps me understand, you know, a little bit. There's often an attendance of 30 at a meeting, sometimes more. There's more. I tend to be conservative in what I say. Comes from a little bit of Lutheran modesty, I think. But anyway, and so we do produce a monthly newsletter for our membership, and we produce it in email format. You can get it a subscription through email. You can get it in Braille. You can get it in large print and still cassette. And we do have all those formats available right now. Like the rest of the media community, we are experiencing needs to tighten budgets and change things. Yes, cassettes are going away. We're going to have to, you know, look at that issue. I think that, I want to put in a plug for a wonderful local organization who is now doing our Braille hard copies. It's the Santa Clara Valley Braille Transcription Project, which was established in 1956 by Sylvia Cassell. And the Braille Project still transcribes, it's a nonprofit. It transcribes textbooks for students. We have an 800-book reading list with novels, poetry, nonfiction for adults and for children. I brought a lot of our materials to the Kahlua table and did a lot of publishing. But there's... Well, I do those. We have a proofreader who doesn't like to proofread things with sex or strong language. So I said, well, give it here, man. You know, you know, it's fine. But anyway, I want to just throw out a kudos to them because they are now doing our brailing for us. And I'm so appreciative of that. They are a nonprofit and these people work so hard. They're just wonderful people. I think that some of the changes I'm noticing have to do with length of our newsletter. We now try to keep it around 3,600 words, I think. And when I first started editing, you know, I was producing issues. We'd had longer articles. You know, they might be 4,500 words. And it was really hard to get those in hard copy formats and keep the costs right for large print and Braille. And so one of the main things that I'm working on now is sort of turning us into less magazine format and more newsletter format, but making sure that we still have the variety of articles that we have. We are extremely fortunate in our membership because we have lots of contributors. I can count on Mike Keithley every month to give us a membership corner where he highlights a few members, their birthdays, summarizes some things going on at the meetings. I can always count on a fundraising report from Michelle McGrew. I always do a program piece. There's Mike always put There's Mike does a tidbits column. In other words, you know, newsletters work best when you have an active membership, right? If you have a newsletter written entirely by the editor, it becomes boring because an editor only has so many voices. And I am so blessed to have such a community of writers. We are trying to introduce little personal pieces to keep the newsletter format working for us. For instance, you know, I used to, I guess English teachers write lengthy. You know, I used to do some long articles. I did an article on visiting the South Dakota Convention for the Blind. I did an article on the Nebraska Convention. We've done longer articles on the Braille Challenge. One of our members did an article on helping assist her daughter in childbirth, and that actually found its way to the Blind Californian. And won an award. Well, what we're finding is that for space reasons, we need to keep things shorter. So we're doing some new little things. We just introduced a column last month called In-House. And In-House is where if you have something going on and you're a chapter member, maybe you have a choral performance, or maybe you're giving a talk somewhere, or maybe you're doing a fundraiser, you can put in a quick little paragraph and the membership can know about it and support you. We have another column that comes in occasionally called WAM, World According to Me. And that's where if something happens to you and you want to do a little paragraph, you know, rant or, you know, you can do that. It's I guess the main change I'm noticing is that we have less space for what I would call feature writing, which makes me sad because I love feature work. So we're trying to find ways of doing shorter features, shorter articles. One of the mad typists, you may have heard Ron and Roger while you were talking, is me, because I'm going to make sure that we have an article in the next issue about the forum that we're conducting right here, you know, in this room. And I may break my own rule about length therein, because I think this is really important stuff. But that's one of our main changes. We have had in the last few issues, and I'm not quite sure why, we've had a few formatting problems with large print that some of the members have kindly drawn my attention to. I am totally blind, and I'm not able to help with that, so I'm going to be calling on my membership to form a little task force for me and help us get our print formatting to where people, you know, where it needs to be. I prefer task force to committees because committees go on forever and task force get things done. So, my friends, you know who you are. I'll be asking you to help me do that. But I would say that's our main change, is we're having to think shorter. We're having to think, how can we be more compact? We also will have to worry about our cassette, you know, option disappearing. I don't know, maybe we can do something audio on the website. I'm not sure, you know, what we're going to do. But mainly it's just shortening things and keeping that variety, and having the variety of voice is what makes that happen, and having dependable columns that come up every time that people know they can expect when they read the newsletter. Is that clear? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
I believe I am through.
Okay, thank you, Susan. We're going to now give the majority of the time to you, the audience. So one of our wonderful mic runners is going to run one mic back and forth between our panelists here, and then the other mic we're going to have run to the audience. If you can stand or raise your hand, then the mic runner is going to recognize you. From what I've gathered, when you first spoke, you want to touch on some topics like I heard that the ACB Braille Forum needs to be in large print as the e-forum is not. I want to archive it. I want to have it hands-on. I want to take it to my dad's house. I need it to refer back to. It's not a read-and-done thing. I heard a daughter with some vision loss, but considering her father, what's his needs? Are they different? To, you know, the low vision compared to her father's macular degeneration, and what we're, so I want to hear all of that, and also the iPhone. I know that the website, the acb.org, can be read on the iPhone, but also there's an app that Larry is working on for ACB to have the forum where you can hear it on the iPhone. So go ahead and raise your hand or stand, and let's hear what you have to say.
Excuse me, this is Bernice, and it's on. Okay. Ron, I am very emphatic, very strongly opposed to utilizing Newsline for our publication, and I'll tell you why. Twice I in the past I signed up to get something to be able to utilize the Newsline to read something, and in both times I got a huge cardboard box full of Federation literature, and you know, and then your name goes on their membership list and you get counted in their count. I think that the American Council should be wise enough to figure out some other method of a recorded version that, well, for me, the recorded version wouldn't work because I'm one of the ones that is not done with it after it's, I want to keep my magazines for future reference. So anyway, that
All right. Thank you.
So I mentioned Audio Now. And what Audio Now is designed to do is to provide you with telephone access to the ACB Braille Forum and the ACB eForum, and possibly other things as well. But the idea behind it, and if you've used it to listen to ACB Radio, because it's already doing that, you know that you can dial on your phone. You can select what you listen to, and that is the way that we want to approach with the ACB Braille Forum and eForum. That doesn't resolve the issue of archiving, which is obviously a different kind of an issue. And I took your comment, or whoever's comment, about asking the question of, you know, do you read the forum and do you retain it? Because one of the things I don't think we've thought about is, we have thought about how often do you read it. We've thought about, do you read it cover to cover? You know, do you read certain parts and skip others? Do you like certain parts and dislike others? What we haven't thought about up to this point is the question of, do you keep it after you're finished? And that is something that I'm going to try to make sure we do ask about.
Hi, I'm the one with the dad. I loaned the old-fashioned CCTV, the big one that I got back in 2003 when I became legally blind. My dad was having some problems, my dad was having some problems initially back, it was about 3 years ago, with the macular degeneration. And I said, well, Dad, can you read this way? And he said, oh, my gosh, I can see it. I could read. He's a magazine, a book reader. He's one of those. Plays golf. He's always been avid. But he's got a pile of books that he can't finish because it's tiring. I realize that because it is hard to read. Your eyes get tired, you get a headache. And now I'm trying to, he loves to listen to the radio, so what you're talking about now could be a big option for him, and it would really enlighten his life. He'd be back again. So I'm looking forward to having that for him. And also, I just received some information about the Santa Clara Valley Macular Degeneration Group from a young lady that was here during the whole introduction thing, so I really appreciate that. And thanks, guys. It's we're going to continue on with this this search. Thank you.
Excuse me, I got to clear my throat. I'm Wayne Dick, and I don't. I guess I think about reading almost all the time, because what I've noticed is that we kind of each make our adaptation, and it's different. And somehow we find it, and it's our balance, and then we're able to read. And so, you know, we really have to figure how to effectively protect each person's way so they're not cut off from reading. And so I know that there's a, actually, I know that there's a lot more technological capability in terms of getting varieties of formats that most people don't know about. I mean, it's more developed than you think it is, and I think that we're also I've been listening to the discussion, and it's kind of like listening to the national news on the death of print media in terms of newspapers and that kind of stuff. I mean, it's kind of like we're experiencing exactly the same thing that you know, all the big newspapers across the country are experiencing. And so the question is, how do we do that? But it is really clear that, you know, once you make an adaptation and you actually get to the point where you can finish a book, which I finished my first book when I was 21, and it's really important to be able to nurture that. But you know, we really do have these great publication formats now, and we could really make them better. We don't just have to stick with the technology that is recommended. I mean, we could certainly start thinking about best practices that would make it much easier to have a lot more flexible media. So I hope we can do that, because
I did want to say, you made me think of one thing, and something that we've discussed when we create copies of different publications and we put them online. We currently, and Annette codes all this stuff, so she'll tell me if I get it. She'd tell me I got it wrong, even if she's not sure. But we store copies in Word, copy in Braille ready, Braille text, BRF, and text file. And one of the things I think we should do is make our publications very downloadable in a very easy to print PDF or Word file, probably PDF, because then that's obviously not real accessible to read. But if your intention is printing, PDF is very good, because you know what you're going to print. And if a lot of places now have, because it does cost money to print, and because it costs production cost and shipping cost, and there's lots of cost, there might be some people who would be able and willing to print their own, because then they get it quicker, so they get some of the advantage of technology, but they also can still have it in a hard copy. And that, I don't view that as us shirking our responsibility off to our members. I view it as an option. The simple fact is, printing, ink toner, print paper, Braille paper, and the equipment to print, and the cost of shipping is money that in some cases we just don't have. And that's why you see, as you referred to, the death of the print media. You know, if the smart newspaper people can't figure out how to put cheap copies of print in people's hands, obviously we're going to be subject to that same challenge. And I think what we have to do is really, really help people recognize that we can deliver this a lot of different ways and give as many options as possible, and then make sure people understand what options we have. But again, if members want paper, then we have to figure out how to pay for it, and that is a shared responsibility between the ACB and the ACB's membership. So, anyway.
Okay, and I wanted to clarify that when you do receive the survey that Ron Brooks is wonderfully helping fine-tune, when we looked at a draft of it, I said, oh, there's like 7 more formats that we could add to the list that do exist now. And so that's a longer list, and I think it will be eye-opening, so to speak, to see how many formats it currently is in. So now those downloadable files do exist. I do them. A lot of my hours are on reformatting the large print so that it's, you know, more readable. So whether it's the, now this is if you have access to a computer, so we know we're not talking to everybody here, but the ones that want something to archive that are computer users, I have both on the ACB Braille Forum and the eForum, I make the downloadable copy available in MS Word large print, the BRF file, and the text file for a short period of time because it was 1 second to do. I also made a PDF, an accessible PDF version. I realize now, and I like that resolution that I heard that about making the PDFs default it to be accessible because, you know, I always can read the PDFs. I have a way of, you know, they're accessible to me. I make them accessible. I make the table of content links, skip to the articles. I do all that. But not everybody can read a PDF. So I was kind of discouraged. So there's not currently a PDF file up there, but maybe that's something you will put on the survey if you want to add that, because really it's not any more time for me to make that as an additional format. But so just to clarify that that exists now for both the eForum and the ACB Braille Forum. But and we know about the archiving. We're hearing you, and I receive my large print in the mail too, and I do miss it on the eForum issues. And one more clarification: back when the funding was cut, I guess 2 years ago now, they said, "Okay, how many issues will this get us?" Oh, 9 out of the where we had 12, and somebody, and you know, several members of the board of publications thought, "Well, we'll give them even more." They saw it as giving us more by instead of giving us 9, giving us 6, but then the other 6, the eForum. It was well intentioned, but now, you know, we're getting to hear from you. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and hand, just raise your hand if you want to talk. Keep your hand up. Anybody that didn't talk yet, I know you want to talk. We want to hear from you.
you know, it's possible now to if you don't like italics, a whole page of italics, and you don't want to read it, it's now possible to turn that into a different style format that's different than the rest of your print, but readable. And there are things that we can do today to augment print, not just large print, but have personally tailored enhanced print that exists today that didn't exist before. And I hope, and I'll work with this committee, I hope to get us to what would be more of an EPUB core, because it can be written to everything, and it can be, you can even put into EPUB, for example, you know, when you're reading a listening to something out loud and it says the word read, and it says the word read again, and one time it's past tense and the other time it's present tense, you know, you really can do that markup these days so that we'll say read and read properly. And it won't say, you know, Street Mungos, it'll say Saint Mungos and things like that. And, you know, there's the downside of the print media, but there's this upside of the fact that the electronic media is going to give us things we didn't have before. When we first saw ebooks, and another thing about the blind community is the blind community is one of the most inventive communities in alternative formats that exists. The blind community created DAISY, and EPUB is based on DAISY. And so the publication industry looked at what the blind community did in order to make accessible formats. So, you know, we really actually have been some of the major leaders in the technology of reading that exists. So I don't know. I'm not trying to, I really know the need of hard copy, but I also know that there's going to be better in the future. take the mic right to you.
Thank you. I agree that the e-publications can be very helpful and very beneficial to communicate a lot of things to a lot of people. But we need to remember an important part of our base, and many, many, many visually impaired and blind people are older and are not used to technology. That's changing, but I think as newspapers are maybe, or the print newspaper is maybe dying, maybe our population is even more dependent on a large part of our population is even more dependent upon either Braille or print material. And we may have to lag even further behind in some ways. If newspapers are dying, we may have to continue to print large print and Braille for a while longer. It may be eventually that we don't need to do this, but I think right now, many, many people are dependent upon Braille and large print, and we pride ourselves on our accessibility to everyone who needs material, and so we need to be sure that all of our publications are available in the most effective manner possible.
You know, I think that this idea of custom making formats is really interesting. And I remember when computers were first coming out, I was saying, you know, that this is great. What we can do is, you know, whoever publishes the book or whatever can just send it over the line over internet or something. And it wasn't internet then. But that's all right. In some kind of bits, and we can, the computer at the receiving end doesn't care whether it makes speech or Braille or print or whatever. And, of course, it doesn't care whether it makes one column or two column or Arial or Verdana or whatever. But the problem is, again, that people don't have that technology. And is there a way, can we think up a way to have some kind of intermediary or something, so that let's imagine that the local chapter of ACB in the future can grab stuff off the wire and make it into some formats that they know some of their members need. We did a survey in CCB about media and formats, and CCLVI did a best practices manual for large print, and there were a lot of things that were kind of close. I mean, Donna Pomerantz said yesterday that she likes Donna Sanchez, but Donna Sanchez likes they're both named Donna. And Donna Sanchez likes Arial, and Donna Pomerantz likes Verdana, or is it the other way around? I'm not quite sure. Some people say low vision people can't read single column; they got to have two columns. And others say no, they want two columns. Anyway, I've been saying for years to Bernice that low vision people, if you have three of them together, you'll have four opinions about print format. So I don't know. I don't know what to do with that, but maybe Wayne is the guy who can tell us or can help us figure out a distribution model that would take all that stuff into account, that you could actually produce on a very much smaller scale, but, somebody who knows something, what EPUB is and so forth, different kinds of formats, very, very customized, black on white, white on black, green on purple, I don't know, whatever. Yeah, right.
This is Debbie Cordero, Donna's sister, Donna Pomerantz's sister. And we think differently also. I'm stopping there about that, either or. Please bear with me. I'm trying to gather my thoughts. There's been a lot of good discussion here. And my goodness, I there's a transition here, obviously. And what I keep coming back to, and I hear Wayne talk about these individuals that look to us, that are in awe of what we've done in regards to, you know, the creations, what we've come up with, right? And these are big entities, I'm sure. I'm not sure which individuals you're talking about, Wayne, but I'm sure they're big entities, and they're looking at us, and Wayne said something, somebody else said something, and I keep coming back to, you know, we have no money, and maybe finding an entity or a sponsor where while we go through this transition, and I know we look at fundraising, but like for our group, you know, an entity that could help us go through this transition, because we do have seniors and individuals that are not computer savvy, or we're not familiar, or something happens in our lives and we lose our vision and we're not ready yet. And to help us over this, maybe have a pool of money. I'm just pulling a name out of the air. I don't know. Let's say, I don't know, Wells Fargo. I'm just throwing a name out there. They can give us, I don't know, $25,000. I don't know. It'd be nice to help with the publications, whether it's large print, whatever we want, Ron, and that money just be for us. I don't know. I'm just throwing this idea out there. Bear with me. Maybe I'm speaking out of, I don't know. I keep coming back and just having money just for this until something's figured out, or the age where, you know, as years go on, everybody's used to computers, but still you're going to have that small percentage of individuals that if they're, heaven forbid, in a car accident and boom, their vision's lost, or something happens, you know, they're not going to be ready for it. And you need that money from Wells Fargo or whoever that's in that pool to help this, whether it's only going to be, you know, 100 publications being mailed out that year. So what? That money's there for them. I don't know. I'm just throwing
great,
that out there.
Great, Debbie. The mic will go to the...
I'm not volunteering to get the sponsor. I'm just throwing it out there. Bernice knows me already.
Okay. Well, I might be part of it. Well, the next person is getting... Yeah, the mic is yours. Go ahead. And I just wanted to supplement what both Ron said earlier and what Roger said. There is a victory. That's why I call Ron my champion, because on the BOP, he got into our publication editorial policy to use the CCLVI best practices document as the standard for the large print that Roger was kind of talking about, that there was 2 years of research in the making of that best practices, Ariel, Verdana, one column, two column. That's what he was referring to. So we have that victory that there is a standard now in ACB. Yes, the woman in the front row here. Go ahead. Yes, you. Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay, this is Cam Schur. You know, I don't know, I'm not sure about how I can phrase my thoughts coherently. It's more I have questions. You have people who use the internet, and it seems to me you can reach them very economically on the internet. You have people who have these telephones, and I'm always impressed how my friends just press buttons and their encyclopedias. And you can transmit your information on the telephone. So what about this thing that I have fallen in love with? My books are now digital. You can get a free machine from the Library of Congress, and but I don't know how they're recorded, but would it be possible for me to buy a digital cartridge in its, in its box, and I would send it to you, you would record your newsletter or whatever, and then you flip the card and send it back to me. And after I hear your publication, I ship it back to you, which is exactly what we do with books. I don't know if this is feasible.
Yeah. First off, it is feasible, although I don't think that Sharon Lovering or anybody in the national office wants to get in the business of recycling media, because it actually comes at a huge cost, both in terms of time and also just packaging and all that. However, I think it is highly possible to, for example, thumb drive technology has gone very, very inexpensive. I mean, it's not down to the cost of a CD-ROM yet, but it's CD-ROMs are becoming more obsolete. Thumb drive technology that plugs into like a USB port or plugs into a lot of audio devices, that technology is getting cheaper. So, you know, one of the things that I'm interested in is what does the, and we'll get this through the survey, you know, the people who want audio format. And we will be able to cross-tab, for example, people that say, I prefer this type of format, but I can read that type of format. And so what I want to kind of see is not only where are we today, and the other thing, we are looking at age segmentation, because I want to see where the trend is today, but also where it is in 5 years, so that we're starting to look at planning our future based on where we're going to be and not where we are today, because things are going to change. I think it is possible to deliver technology in a low-cost audio format. However, one of the things that we've heard, and particularly from CCLVI, is there are lots of people who don't prefer audio format. They prefer paper format. At the end of the day, we can generate paper and mail it. We can generate a file that can come to somebody who can print it. If we are going to be the ones who are printing producing the paper and mailing the paper, that is a cost issue, and we have to figure out the cost that goes with it. I think we will to some extent. I also think that if we give people more options, they will take those options. So, for example, with regard to the print issue, there are lots of there's a big group of people. Let's say there's 1,000 people who really, really want hard copy print, or they want Braille. Okay, but if you segment that market, let's take the print as an easy example. There's 1,000 people who want print, and of that 1,000 people, there's maybe 200 people who really they don't have a way to print it. They need you to mail it to them because they don't have a computer, but maybe the rest of the group, that they can get an email and they can print it, and they're happy to do that because then they can get it quicker or whatever. Or they don't mind the slight cost for them of printing out a copy, which they can then keep. So you take your cost. Instead of trying to send 1,000 print copies that you can't afford, you're sending a few hundred that you can afford and letting other people kind of fend for their own print needs. So that's the kind of research that we're trying to do so that we can be more smart about how we do this.
Just a quick question, Ron. Is that you mentioned $40 to print? Is that available for us to see? I was just curious.
That's a number that we get from our editor, and I want to clarify. I want to clarify that is not the cost of printing the copy for one individual for a year. That is the aggregate. It costs more than that to produce large print for one member for 1 year. It costs more than that to produce Braille for one member for 1 year. It costs less than that to produce electronic or audio. That's an aggregated cost average. So if you wanted to just look, and I don't know the breakdown. I could probably get it because we know what our production costs are. We know what our vendors cost to produce these formats. And we could actually do that. One of the things that I do not want to see us do is charging members based on what their accessibility needs cost. Because different formats cost differently, and I don't want to get into a situation where we're, you know, charging certain users more or certain users less. And I don't even want to start down the road of telling people your stuff cost us more than her stuff, because that's going to start to create stratification in our community.
Well, actually where I was going was, I was just curious if it was available, and you mentioned the breakdown. If it was available to us, and if you could get it, I was just curious if, I was just going to do a little experiment, Bernice, not that I was going to.
Yeah, I
just to approach, like, let's say Wells Fargo or somebody I know at a credit union, just to see, you know.
We're going to have a town hall meeting, and I want to just throw this out there. I got where you're going. You're trying to basically write the grant application. And
well, I'm definitely not a writer. I'm just curious because I'm all about, you know, trying to get money to whoever really needs it if there is a need. But if there was a number out there, I would just approach somebody I knew personally and just say, you know what, if someone came up with you with these figures and if I were to present it like this regarding this transition, just and you hit it on the nose, Ron, later on, maybe we might not need this down the road, but just to get us through this hump, if there was funding that a financial institution would give us, like let's say $25,000, you know, just to get us through the sum, because maybe in 5 years we may not need this, you know. Any just a thought, if the numbers were available.
Yeah, we're going to have a town hall meetings at our national conference and convention, and I think what you just described, I think it would be interesting for us to actually give a little spiel on what it costs to produce each issue in each format, not because we want to make people feel good or bad about what they cost, but just so that people can kind of understand how the numbers work. The other thing I will tell you is that I believe, and I'm going a little bit off memory here, I believe the cost of producing the Braille form in total, all formats combined for 1 year for the entire, on the national level, is in the range of, and it's, I think it's in the $50,000 to $55,000 range. I think, is that sounds right to you? Okay.
Go ahead, Bernice.
You're looking at the cost, but you have to look at the other side of what the publication is about. It's a communication tool. It is getting information to people who need it, who cannot get it elsewise. And it is a public relations tool to the general community. And you know, we're a nonprofit, and a certain amount of our funds has to go to service to members. So, you know, there are a lot of things that you have to consider, not just the cost, but what is the cost for? What is it doing?
Yeah. I just wanted to let you know that we're actually 2 or 3 minutes over time. Actually, 7 minutes over time from when I was asked to wrap it up. But this is getting really good. We do want to hear from you. You can contact any of us, and you also please look for that survey. Like I said, it's even assistance to call up, and people on the phone will help you. There will be all different ways to fill that out. And a place, I'm hoping, Ron, there's a place where they can write in, right? All their own comments, right? I think, I hope. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but we do know that the cost balance preferred, everybody has a right to have what they can use. So we do understand that.
If people want to communicate something to Ron, they can either send it to. I'm just about to get an email box that'll be CCCLV at something or other. So we'll publish that on the connection and in the Blind Californian. But if you are not computer oriented and you want to make a comment, you can always call me, and we will scribe it for you and forward it on to the appropriate entity. So feel free to contact me if you if you need somebody, if you need somebody to write it down for you and forward it on. We there's a lot of ways we can, you know, skin a cat. You know, like in the early days of the Silicon Valley newsletter, it was a one page front and back, and we did not have the recorded form. That was deliberate, but we did offer it by fax in large print.
I'm going to tell you quickly how you can reach ACB if you want to get a hold of Ron or the BOP or even a comment to me. There is the info email. If you use the email, info@acb.org, there is also the 800 telephone for ACB. Both of those say it's the question or comment is for the BOP, and it will go there. Sharon Lovering actually manages that phone and that email, I believe both. So it will come to the BOP. Ron and I were just talking. Our hope is that there's an email that can be set up to receive your comments. I thought there was going to be, but it kind of went differently.
Don't you still have individuals? Ron, do you have R. Brooks at...
We may change that, but it isn't in place now.
Okay, so the publications emails, you can specify that it's for the BOP, and Sharon does bring that to the BOP. I would like to see more of a open discussion, but that's what the survey is for now. You know, stay tuned. If there's something in addition to the survey, you'll know about it. I'll definitely let Bernice know and everybody. But right now, call the info, email the info, and look for that survey. And the BOP is bending over backwards to make sure that you get all of your say in here. So I so thank you for your participation. If you want to contact me personally, some of you know me, know how to get a hold of me, and please do that. And thank you again, Susan Glass, Roger Peterson, Ron Brooks, and thank you.